Hi, I'm Ian Green. I'm here with Alan Carrington. This is Between the Buttons at the University of Adelaide. And today we're talking to Dr. Bill Ashraf, the Director of Technology Enhanced Learning at the University of Sussex. That's a real mouthful. I didn't think I was going to get that one right. Bill, how you doing?
Not so bad. Yes, I can sympathise. I think most people have real problems with that, but you got there, so I'm really impressed.
We got it right, so it's a good start.
Yeah, but he's got a very strange accent. I mean, if we were playing the test series, we wouldn't be talking to you, Bill. I'm sorry.
Well, let's not get into that. Let's talk about better comparisons between Australia and England. Bill, tell us a bit about the work you do back at the University of Sussex.
My appointment at Sussex is a relatively new appointment, and really it's to try and strategise and bring together all the different facets of e-learning, technology enhanced learning across the university. So I really work with colleagues in the information technology, ITS, in the computer centre, in the library, in the unit called Teaching and Learning Development, which is the pedagogical issues around e-learning and the learning we do. And also I work with academic colleagues quite closely at the university. In fact, I am still an academic member of staff. I still have a faculty position, so I still teach students in my subject area, which is biochemistry.
Okay, sounds interesting. So what's your main drive there? What kind of gets you up in the morning and gets you racing into work and gets you buzzing?
Yeah, you've got to remember it's not Australia, so that it's not certainly not the weather.
Right.
No, but seriously, I think the every day is different. It's a real challenge. It's a challenge to get everything aligned and working together. There are so many different competing pulls on the university, so many different pulls on time. But really, I guess my main sort of drive is to make Sussex, I guess, one of the leaders in e-learning, certainly within the UK, and to become recognised as a centre where, at least in terms of how technology is used, it's certainly student-facing, and it's really what the students are becoming to expect with their use of their mobile phones and on the internet all the time.
How big's the university, Bill?
The university, I think we've probably got about 10,000 students at the University of Sussex. So we're probably a small to medium-sized campus-based university.
Okay, and what kind of situation do you have there? Do you have a virtual learning environment, a Blackboard or WebCT thing, or you're right into mobile devices? What's it like?
Our learning platform, VLE, is actually a Moodle-based system. It's badged as StudyDirect. And we have a team of developers who keep that running, and we have the pedagogical side covered as well through the Teaching and Learning Development Unit. We recently conducted an optional appraisal to see whether we should take up a proprietary VLE, of which there are not many around at the moment. Mm-hmm. But after a full option appraisal, looking at the cost, and bearing in mind we were already in the Moodle world, we decided that we would actually stay with Moodle.
Bill, you mentioned something last week which is fascinating, and this is usability testing. With this, could you just explain to us what you're doing with it? Because I think that's staggering. It's terrific.
I think one of the issues with I think a lot of web-based systems and a lot of user interfaces is they're probably not designed very well, and certainly not with the user in mind.
Yes,
so from my experience, I came from an environment which didn't use a proprietary. It did use a proprietary system. Came to Moodle, and I was quite taken aback by, and I'm a more tech-savvy member of academic staff, taken aback by, I guess, the level of complexity of the interface. There were lots of drop-down boxes, the interface was very crowded, it was very technical, and certainly from a techie's perspective, it was probably pretty clear and obvious, but to your average user, your average very, very busy academic member of staff, I think it would have been a real barrier to adoption. So what we've done now, we've undertaken a piece of work with a spin-out company at the University of Sussex called Vertical Slice. Now, Vertical Slice are probably pretty uniquely situated in Brighton in the UK, which is where Sussex University is quite near. It's a digital hotspot. It's where a lot of Web 2.0 companies are, a lot of startup companies, a lot of digital media and social networking companies there. And Vertical Slice is about, I guess, a company that actually looks at how games can be better designed and how interfaces can be better designed. So Vertical Slice mm-hmm. are actually looking at, well, they've finished actually the work where they're filming and making recommendations in terms of how users are using our Moodle-based system and are making recommendations to how to actually simplify the whole process. So we want to declutter it and make it easy, basically.
So this is the sort of lab where people come in and have a pizza and a beer and play around with the computer as if they're in the lounge room and get paid for it, and the results advance science. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
It's certainly, that's good to me.
So, it's certainly a lab that I would certainly like to have worked in, I have to say. It's basically set up as a front living room. There are lots of nice big screens there. There are PlayStations, Xboxes. And, you go in, you can relax on a sofa. And I think getting people relaxed is actually quite a good thing. And they are set loose with new games, new interfaces, new controls. And they're actually monitored, and they're asked questions on their experiences. So it's a pretty unique setup.
So your audience in that will be academics from university, your university, is that right?
That's right. So what we've done is actually taken a sample size of academics at Sussex, novices, new academic members of staff, academics who are fairly familiar with Moodle, and also, very interestingly, we've got a couple of academics who have visual impairments to mm-hmm. varying degrees, mm-hmm. and we're actually taking all that and wrapping up, because I think it's actually accessibility is a really important issue.
Oh, okay. So are there any results from that study that you can tell us about yet, or is it all under wraps still?
Well, it's not quite under wraps, but, there are certainly operations already that are coming out as being overly complicated. File upload, and it sounds a pretty easy thing to do, but that's a quite a long-winded process in terms of just the physical layout. I think the take-home message is there needs to be a lot less information on the screen, and it needs to be a lot less cluttered.
Okay, so one of your real drivers is removing the clutter particularly for academic staff, for having a kind of getting rid of the artificialities of the technology and just having it easy and intuitive. Is that the aim?
Yeah, I guess a strat line for me is actually making the technology invisible, to make it as easy as possible. Staff in the UK at the moment academic staff are facing increasing sort of pressures on their time with various constraints of funding that the universities are going through. So anything that makes their life easier to, one, encourage them to use our VLE, and also for those that are using it or about to use it, to convince them and assure them that it's not going to be a real strain of a process for them to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Besides the scuba diving, why else did you come to Australia?
Ah, the scuba diving, yes. It wasn't the primary reason why I
got
to Australia.
Although
the sharks off Adelaide are a cause for concern, but yes. I'll take that as I can. Why else I come to Australia? Well, I think Australia and Canada, which I went to recently as well, but Australia, I think the actual geography has actually forced Australia, I guess, to be a leader in e-developments and e-learning. Moodle, I think, is actually based in Perth and actually came out of an Australian initiative. The digital recording systems we're using in our lecture theatres at the moment, actually called Echo 360. I think that actually morphed out of an Australian company originally. So I think Australia's got a pretty good pedigree and a fairly solid background and forward-looking way of actually looking at e-learning and using technology to actually ensure that students are wherever they are, can still connect to their university.
So how many universities have you been to here? I mean, what's the plan?
The plan is, came first to University of Adelaide, got a talk and visit that's already happened at University of South Australia, and there's a talk planned in a few days' time to speak at the University of Melbourne. Previous to this visit, I was actually invited to speak at University Technology Sydney, but that was about a year ago, so I'm reasonably familiar with their sort of setup as well.
You're going to Flinders, right?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Don't forget Flinders.
Don't forget Flinders. How could I?
Don't forget Flinders.
Don't forget Flinders. Thanks for that, Ron. I'm speaking at Flinders University tomorrow. So again, I'm hoping to get a really good feel for the Aussie setup in relation to e-learning. Prior to coming here, I did a mini sort of road tour of e-learning universities in the UK, and I think there are certain similarities that are actually appearing.
Would you tell us about that? What have you learnt?
Yes, thank you. Yes, so yeah, Alan actually asked me that over lunch, and I sort of choked a bit on my food. So thanks very much, Alan, for that prompt. That's an excellent question, he says, prevaricating.
Yes.
I think the thing that sort of it is somewhat reassuring is that I think the universities that I've visited are all doing about the same thing.
That's good.
I think we're all at about the same thing. I think the Aussie sort of system, as I can see, is probably better resourced, I have to say, from what I can see. And that's just looking around. That's not looking at how much is spent. But I get the impression it's pretty well resourced. So I think we're at the same sort of level of par the technology that we're using. I don't think many of us are using or exploiting Web 2.0 much at all, in fact, which I'm not really quite sure what that is. And again, that's one of, I should have said, actually, that's one of the drivers for me in terms of trying to embed that more into my university. The other issue, I think, is the operational side, without being a bit boring. Walking around universities in the UK recently, including my own and in my previous institution in the UK, and also the universities in Adelaide, in relation to how we handle paper, particularly in relation to assessments, we aren't using much of the e-submission, by the looks of it. We're still relying very, very heavily on paper-based collecting assessments, signing them in, signing them out. And really, that's the sort of process that we really should, as a university community, be more efficient with in terms of how we're managing that. I get the impression we're spending a lot of money and time and resource sort of wasted just shunting bits of paper around for no value.
Yeah, there seems to be a real resistance to sort of digitising that assessment submission. Is that something that you've noticed? Is there a reason for that?
Yes, I mean, I have a lot of sympathy with academic members of staff who are very, very reluctant to mark online, particularly with different types of, particularly with assessments that are, let's say, 5,000-10,000 word essays. Probably marking a couple of those online isn't so bad, but when we get to the stage where we're having to mark 50, 60, maybe up to, approaching 100 essays or written pieces of work, it's going to be a real strain to mark that online. But I'm sure there are better ways of doing it. We could change our assessments. There's no reason why we have to do everything by 5,000, 2,500 word essays. So that's something to consider. But also, I think we need to be more imaginative and maybe a little bit more joined up as to if work is going to be submitted, are we going to have a back office situation where the work is submitted and the work is printed off at large scale and then somehow more efficiently parceled up and given to members of staff. And members of staff could actually would hopefully be able to provide e-feedback, because I think students are particularly keen on having e-feedback because of its rapidity, because it's easy to read than handwriting. Mm-hmm. I think there are a whole series of advantages. And one of the other things that I should say, I guess, in the UK at the moment, there's in a lot of universities, we're going towards this internationalisation strategy where we're looking to actually invite students from overseas. Yeah. Now, you could argue that if they're going to do their work at home in the holidays, if they go home, perhaps asking them to post dissertations is really not the smart way of doing it. And in fact, in the academic community, although I appreciate there's a difference in scale, nobody submits their academically peer-reviewed paper by mail. It's all done electronically via an electronic editorial office.
Yeah, so there's a real disparity between what we do as researchers and maybe what we do as teachers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So one more question then. We're thinking 3 to 5 years down the track. If you have your way, push your university the direction you want to see it go, what's it going to look like? A group of students wandering around with iPads, or no students, they're all online, or what? Paint us a picture.
I think there will always be the situation where the student will have face-to-face teaching and learning. The students want to be on campus because it's not just about the academic discipline, it's about the experience of the whole world of being in a university. I can envisage, perhaps, a situation where we have IT lights in terms of the devices that people use, probably don't have much power, but what they can do is connect to the internet. And a lot of the applications will live in the so-called cloud, and the students will have these applications which might be cheap. But there's a lot of talk around sort of e-plastic and e-logic sort of paper that are browser devices. So you could envisage a situation where a lot of the computing capacity power lives in the cloud. Students draw the applications off as and when they need them. The applications are very, very portable. and students can interact real time in a lecture, either through their own mobile device or something that's like, dare I say, an electronic slate. Actually, going back to the slate situation, the notes are made by the students that are that are wirelessly connected from the lecturer's notes, and they're automatically shunted after the lecture up to, let's say, an e-portfolio system. The students can keep a permanent record, mm-hmm. and those notes and systems will be synced automatically to their mobile phone, their desktop at home, and if they have a laptop or any other sort of device, that would automatically be synced as well.
Mm, sounds fabulous. Quite a vision. Well, Bill, I think you have some oxygen to put into some scuba diving tanks, and we better let you go. I've been talking to Dr. Bill Ashraf, Director of Technology Enhanced Learning at the University of Sussex, Alan Carrington and Ian Green with Between the Buttons.